Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Monday. We're going to talk some USC Trojan football with our friend, Coach Harvey Hyde. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Harvey Hyde or go to his website, HarveyHyde.com. If you want to email the show and send us a question, you guys have been doing that. Good job of that. Podcast at USCFootball.com. That is our email address. Or if you want to call or text, our number is 424-254-9141. We'd really appreciate if you go to our iTunes page, iTunes.com/Peristyle Podcast. Leave us some positive feedback. Leave us a 5-star rating. We'd love to get those. We got a whole bunch of ratings on there, but we'd love to get some more. We know a lot of listeners out there. So if you have an extra minute or two, go to our iTunes page and leave us a 5-star rating, a review. That would be awesome. We're also on Google Play and Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio and Audio Boom. You can find us all over the place. Just search Peristyle Podcast. And if you can't find us somewhere, let me know. Just email me and I'll make sure we get listed there as well. We're going into our 10th football season, and now it's only days away from the opener against Western Michigan. So we want to talk with the coach, Harvey Hyde, about everything that was going on in fall camp and now leading up to the game. What is up, coach? How you doing?
Everything is great, buddy. It's finally here. Man, I've talked to a lot of coaches here and other places, and it's been a long, long camp. And at some camps, they even gave kids off and took them bowling or went to a movie or did something just to break up the long process, let their legs rest up, and now it's game week. And this is what it's all about. You don't want them to play on Wednesday. You want them to play on Saturday afternoon at 2:15 p.m.
That's when the Trojans will kick it off against Western Michigan in the Coliseum. I will be there. Hopefully you will all as well. Before we jump into talking about all that stuff, I wanted to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. You can go to sctickets.com or call them at 1-800-888-7287. If you want to go to the game, you can go to sctickets.com and they will hook you up. Tell Curtis that Coach Harvey Hyde sent you over there. And I'm sure he'll have a good story or two for you. But go to sctickets.com. If you want to go to USC, hey, you want to go to the UCLA game across town, UCLA taking on Texas A&M. I might go to that one myself. So, coach, I actually probably have to give Curtis a call because I just talked about this last night with my wife. I might go to the Rose Bowl for that game on Sunday. So I'll have to give Curtis a call. I just thought about it.
I think you should. He'll get you a ticket probably right on the 50-yard line, buddy, and I'll be there, too. It'll be a lot of fun. And, you know, Ryan, we were just talking about it before we went on the show about Clay Helton being at the Passing a Quarterback Club on Friday. Doors will open at 11 a.m. He'll start speaking at 12. He's got to be back at practice at staff meeting at 1:30. So if you're out there, get there early. It's 171 North Raymond, Passing a University Club. And you'll have a chance to hear the coach just hours before the opening game. I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, that's. I'm looking forward to that one too. So that's pretty rare. I mean, coach, for you know, he's got his home opener, his season opener, the next day, and for him to go up to Pasadena and spend a couple hours up there, that's really nice. I'm looking forward to seeing what he has to say at the quarterback's club and seeing you as the MC, because you pretty much run Pasadena, coach. So I love seeing you at events up there. It's always great.
Well, we're looking forward to everybody coming over. We've got a great schedule. If you want to see who's speaking during the year, we have 12 events on Friday. We have John Spanos, Kevin Demoff, and Kenny Sanchez, who is the number one or the coach of Bishop Gorman High School, who this week will be playing Modern Day. Last week they beat the Massa, the number 6 ranked team in the country. We think he right now currently, well, he's won 55 straight games. He's going to be a speaker. We're going to fly him in. You can get all the dates and who's speaking from Sam Cunningham to all the way down to the end. It's absolutely fantastic. I think it's the best club around as far as talented speakers and real interest for all of us to, you know, learn and talk with these people and meet them.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Those are always cool events. And obviously, Clay Helton being there the day before the game. So it's cool. It's kind of rare to be able to hear from him in that kind of intimate setting. So looking forward.
Well, let me tell you what kind of guy he is, okay?
All right.
They don't have a bye the entire year, okay? So really, you can't get him because if he goes on the road, they're traveling. But when he's at home, it's going to be that type of situation. So I ran into him, and we were talking about it in Manhattan Beach at a fundraiser we were at, charity event for cancer. And I asked him if he'd do it, and if he did it the opening week, it'd be probably a lot easier on him because he got a couple of additional days to prepare for Western Michigan than other teams. And he says, I'm going to go back. This is the type of guy he is. Most people would say, absolutely not, I can't do it. He said, we're going to do it. I'm going to go back, talk to Woody, and we'll put this together. I mean, that is absolutely amazing that he would do this for everybody.
Yeah, great stuff. He was amazing. If you didn't see, we had a little event at the USC Village last Thursday, and we had a bunch of people come out, and we were doing it at Trader Joe's, who's one of our sponsors, and Trader Joe's was amazing. We gave away like 600 of these reusable, custom-made USC Trader Joe's bags, and they were like super, super popular. We gave away a bunch of gift cards, Trader Joe's gift cards and stuff, and we had some USCfootball.com cups and stickers and things like that. So it was a lot of fun. A lot of fans came out. We had former players, Khalid Holmes and Keith Rivers came out, and that was fun to kind of talk with them. Gavin Morris came over, who's the director of player development. And then, of course, the main attraction was Clay Helton. And the same kind of thing. You know, after practice one day, we asked him, like, hey, coach, we're just doing a little event over there. And we just put this together at the last minute. So it wasn't like something we planned for a long time. We're just going to do a little event over at the USC Village. It's an awesome facility. Just kind of check it out. We're going to do a live stream from there. And we asked Clay Helton, hey, would you mind coming over? And, like, before I could even ask, like, he was just like, yes, like, what do you need? And, I mean, you know, you have to be accessible to the fans, to the media. He's like, that's just the way it is. And so that's his philosophy. Hopefully he's not spreading himself a little too thin. It was nice. I mean, he wasn't over there for too long, but we got him on camera for a while talking, and he signed a bunch of autographs and people's helmets and things like that. So it was definitely fun. And he got to talk about the USC Village, which is this amazing new facility, $700 million. It's not just a facility. I mean, it's huge. And it's a recruiting tool for them. So it's something that he's embracing because he knows when you can bring recruits over there and check it out, that's something you can combat Westwood on. Like, this is an amazing, you know, it's got Trader Joe's and Target. It's got like 23 restaurants and all this retail stuff. So it's pretty cool to have that right next to campus. And that's something that he can use as a recruiting tool going forward.
Absolutely fantastic. It is something great, and I think it'll assist USC, and it's an arms race at every university of who can outdo who. But this is not a football improvement. This is a university improvement for everyone. So I think it's fantastic.
Well, let's jump into some questions, Coach. And our buddy Nick, Big Nick from Cyprus, he said, now that fall camp is done, the team's focusing on game day scenarios with Western Michigan. Who would you name as your starting five offensive line for week one? And just to let people know, USC did release a depth chart yesterday, so on Sunday. So it wasn't something that came out. It wasn't something like Clay Helton gave us at practice. Basically, what USC does every week is they put out their game notes for the game on Sunday, you know, so 6 days basically before the game. And typically that's when they put out their depth chart. And it's got a lot of information in it. It'll tell you the player's Twitter and or Instagram account. It tells you what their major is. And there was a few sports writers that were kind of making fun of Michigan, who hasn't even released a depth chart at all for the year. They still have their 2016 depth chart up. And someone tried to use the Freedom of Information Act to get their depth chart. So the comparison between here is USC's giving you everything that they have, and Michigan won't even give you a name, was pretty funny. But I digress. But anyway, okay, so as far as the depth chart that was released, Coach, they have Chuma Doga starting at right tackle, Vianney Talamaivao at right guard, Nico Fala at center, Chris Brown at left guard, and Toa Lobondon at left tackle, and there's no Orr's there as far as the first team goes. So I don't know if you agree with that, but just kind of get your thoughts for Nick.
Well, if last week, if you listened to our podcast last week, that's the exact starting offensive line that I put out there. I said that that's where going to be. How long have I been telling you Nico Fala is going to be the center? I don't know. Forever. They're not going to move a starting center after you win 9 straight football games. And again, I said also they weren't sure about the left tackle spot yet as far as Austin Jackson or whatever. And when they have some confidence, they may move Toya back to left guard, and Austin could take that left tackle. But they want the most experienced offensive lineman on the field, and that's what they've done. They're going to be watching Chris Brown exactly and how he does at the left guard position, and they'll evaluate there as far as the positions on would they be better off at Toya there and Austin Jackson at left tackle, or are they better off the way they are now? And they'll look at all of the and do evaluation, but that's exactly what we talked about last week, and this is what we're going to go with, or they're going to go with. It's the most experienced offensive lineman they have that have played. If you remember, Chris Brown started last year, so here we go again. So this is what they're going to have to go with, and then after the game, do a lot of tape and make decisions, because I saw Stanford play on television. I was in Australia on television. I'm going to tell you, they're a darn good football team. They might be the best football team they play the whole year.
Yeah, that I feel pretty good, Coach. I was the only media member to pick Stanford to win the North in the media poll. There was only one. And I was like, I did. Wow, that was only me. So I feel pretty good now about that one. I've been saying that's the most important game for sure. And they did look really good. I was watching on my iPad at a party to watch the fight, and I don't think I watched the second half, but like, you didn't really need to. You could see you knew what was going on, from watching that. But while we're on the depth chart, I'll just give you a few quick notes on the offensive side, Coach. So, Clay Helton went with a veteran group for the wide receivers. He has Jalen Green, Deontay Burnett, and Steven Mitchell, all listed, as the starters. And then there's a bunch of Orr's and stuff. Kind of behind them, but it's, you know, a little surprised. I thought Velus Jones played well, but I thought, Tyler Vaughns was, really impressive. I thought he deserved a start. So we'll see kind of what ends up happening there, but they have Reuben Peters as a fullback, which is just like, whatever. Ronald Jones is the starting tailback, but then there's a whole bunch of Orr's behind him, with Aka Cedric Ware and Vavai Malapia and Stephen Carr. So they're all like kind of the Orr's for second string. And then the tight end situation, there's just all Orr's. So everybody's just Orr. Tyler Petit, Daniel Amitabebe, who's been injured, Kerry Angeline, and Josh Follow, and Eric Cromenhoek. So, So Tyler Petit and Daniel Amitabebe are the two Orr's as the starters, and then the rest of the guys are Orr's as the second string. But any kind of thoughts on the offensive depth chart that was released?
Well, he's definitely going with a veteran group, and I think you owe that to your veterans and guys that have been around. They've worked hard, and it's their turn. I think that they're giving them the opportunity to keep their position or lose their position. And this is what the first game is all about, evaluate who can play on the field and who can make the big plays and who can play under pressure. Because you don't have time to fool around. That second week is going to be a real challenge. And Western Michigan isn't going to lay down either. So it's going to be a big afternoon at the Coliseum. And you want to get your guys out there that have been working hard with your program. And when you see the Orr's, that means these kids are going to play. But the starting group is going to be a bunch of veterans. They're in a freshman starting anywhere. And I think that's deserving of Coach Clay Helton and giving everybody an opportunity, especially if it's equal or close to being equal.
Yeah.
You always give it to the vet. Always give it to the vet. You got to do that.
My guess is you're going to see a lot of Tyler Vaughns. You'll see, I think, a pretty wide rotation at the receiver group is my guess, and we'll see. Real quick on the defense, too, while we're looking at it. Pretty much looks the same. So nose tackle is Josh Fatu now. And you have Kenny Bigelow behind him with Marlon, Tui Pelotu, and Brandon Peely. They're all Orr'd. But we know Marlon was getting a lot of the first team reps, and now the veteran Fatu is listed as the starter. You know, Cameron Smith, he's still an inside linebacker, but playing middle now. And then you got John Houston as the other inside linebacker with him. And then, you know, Ajani Harris, who's been playing really good, is the starting nickel. And then Jack Jones basically replacing, Adoree Jackson at the other spot, but Hawkins and Tell at the safety. So a lot of familiar names on the defensive depth chart with a couple new spots and same thing. Veteran group, coach, no freshmen on there starting.
No, it's a veteran group. And again, if you notice, that some of the guys that were doing so great in the spring, as far as freshmen, they had their opportunity to be evaluated. They are good players and they've got to be ready to play. But right now you're going to give Bigelow that opportunity, Fatu that opportunity to play and start. And it's, you know, it's their job to lose. That's the way I used to say, hey, you got it. Now see if you can keep it. And I tell the underclassmen or people that are second, third, and fourth club, now it's your job to take it away. When you get in that game, make me, make me believe I was wrong. So it's time to get in there. So right now you've got the great competition going on. I think it's great. When you have depth, you're able to do that and get a good rotation going. You know me, I'm the one that likes to see my players play. But again, you can spell them not all at one time, but occasionally get players in and out so that you don't break down, and get them on tape so you can find out who can cover, who can tackle, who can remember what they're supposed to do. And I think it's a great opportunity to do that against Western Michigan, and especially get your proper alignments, because next week you're going to face, in some situations, a three tight end type of offense, two tight ends split and one at tight end, and they're all 6'5 or bigger, and they can run, and they try to mismatch you everywhere in the secondary. And again, Stanford, I'm not talking about Western Michigan. We can do that too. But they got a great secondary. And so it's going to be a great challenge. And this is why you got to get your vets ready, because your vets have been through a war before,
yeah,
a battle. And you got to have them ready to play again early. You got to really play early against these teams. And Western Michigan, I'm telling you, they were 13-1 last year and lost 16 to Wisconsin, who's an outstanding football team. They've got a new head football coach that's fired up that was there. They got two great running backs, three offensive linemen returning, 12 starters returning, pretty good defense. So they've learned how to win, and they're not going to lay down either. So they're going to have a challenge here, and it's going to be great to play somebody that'll hit back, and because you've got to get ready to play the next week too.
Yeah, and I think it matters more on the defensive side as far as the depth chart goes. Like the offensive line, that's probably not going to change much. But on defense, Clancy Pendergast doesn't like to rotate a whole lot. If it's a Stanford team where you only run 65 plays or something, the starters are pretty much playing the whole way. So that's likely what's going to happen. I think you'll see a lot more movement on the offensive side of the ball. They'll rotate running backs, rotate receivers, tight ends, and things like that. The special teams depth chart is basically a bunch of oars. I don't think you need to, like, no one's really won a spot anywhere. So, we don't really need to go into that. So there's no real revelations from special teams on the depth chart. It's really just a whole bunch of oars. Let's go to Eric in Duck Country, coach. He said, what do you think, of how Coach Clay Helton runs and structures practice? Does he do anything different or unique from what you've seen other teams do, and do you like what you see? Thanks, as always, Eric in Duck Country.
No, it's been a standard type of practice at USC under all the coaches that have been there. I don't see a lot of change as far as the procedures of practice. They have their, you know, stretching, their pre-practice drills they go through, the kicking game they go through. I would say USC probably spends as much time or more time on special teams than most teams I've seen or most teams I coach. I used to like to give them a lot of time to special teams coaches, but I think Clay Helton really gives them a lot of time as far as John Baxter and making sure those special teams are ready to play continuously every practice, in the middle of practice, before practice, whenever they need it. But I think it's basically the same. I haven't had an opportunity to evaluate the players as much as I would be able to evaluate other practices because of the location of where the media has to stand. But I think that that's different than a lot of other schools. But I think it's the same type of thing, and I think there's less hitting than before. We used to hit a lot more, and teams used to hit a lot more as far as keeping the tempo and the intensity of the game and the thud part of it as well as the whole thing. But, again, you don't want to get anybody hurt, but you got to remember how the game is played. You only get better at the game by playing the game, not watching the game or walking through it.
All right, Coach. Thanks for that one from Eric. He actually has one more we can get to, too. He said, I noticed on the newly released depth chart that the kickers seem to be listed as co-starters with a dreaded or between them. So we did just talk about this, yeah. Do you know if this means one will be responsible for kickoffs and the other field goals, or is there no real separation between the two? Isn't it dangerous to not name a defined starter at a position that requires so much confidence? Thanks, as always, Eric in Duck Country. And just to let you know, Eric, there's been a, as far as the kickers go, Brown and McGrath, they've been battling. It's kind of gone back and forth. I honestly don't think they know yet at this point. I mean, maybe this week, or maybe the mock game they held on Saturday, maybe that determined a little bit more. But I just think they don't quite know yet. But any thoughts, Coach?
Well, I'll tell you, I would say that Mike Brown will probably be the kicker. He's a scholarship athlete, and Chase isn't. I would say that you'd look bad as a coach if you've got a scholarship kicker and a freshman walk-on beats him out. Now, of course, if Chase is better, there's no question you're going to go with your best player. But if they're equal, you're going to go with the scholarship player, Michael Brown, who you brought in a year ago. Now, they are both freshmen, but one has been there in a redshirt year type of situation. As far as kickoffs, I think they're both sort of erratic. I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, Ryan. You've been there at more practices than I have. I don't see the deep kickoffs from either one of them into the end zone. Now, I know they had that type of stat in high school as far as driving the ball into the end zone where there's no returns, but I don't see that type of distance in their legs. But again, maybe they need to get their leg back. Maybe they're kicked out. So I used to tell my special teams coach, that's enough kicking. They got to get strength back in their leg and just let them work on just chip shots and placements and different things here on game week. But I would say they're equal. I have no idea. One has a good day and one has a bad day, but probably more consistent over the last couple of weeks is Chase, but I don't know if he'll get the first chance.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think when you have a scholarship kicker, that's who you're going to have to go with. Like, you wasted, not, I'm sorry, I shouldn't say wasted, Coach. You spent a scholarship on a kicker. If it's close, it's probably going to go to him, but you got to, you know, like you said, if you feel somebody is, you know, better and they're a walk-on, that's the person you should play. I haven't really seen, and, you know, I know a lot of the media that were trying to, like, watch the kicks, and from where we stand in the practice field, it's hard to tell if some of them are good or not. So when there's officials out there, you can, but we're basically looking perpendicular to where the kickers are kicking. And you're like, is that good? Is that not? And if it's right down the middle, it hits the camera tower, you can tell. But otherwise you can't. So I don't think it'll be mixed. I think it'll probably be Michael Brown doing all of the kicking duties, simply because he's the scholarship guy. And if it's this close, he's going to get, the edge. But it's got fans worried. I'm not exactly sure. I mean, it's like, it's a kicker, you know, like if Sam Darnold's kicking butt, the kicker won't matter. Won't matter all that much, but people are really worried about it, Coach.
I am too. It's a big part of the special teams, or it's one third of your, offense, defense. It's one third of what you do, at a, with a football team. And when they're called upon, I like to send a guy in where I know he's automatic. I don't want to send a guy in when I look the other way and I say, tell me, was it good or bad? Or everybody's wondering what's going on. They're, neither one of them, and then nothing against the kids, are boomers. None of them put the distance, and when you hear the balls hit, you know, wow, that ball's going. So we've got to see exactly what happens, and I don't think there's a feeling of confidence there. I think these kids have got to, you got to build the confidence into them. I don't know if rotating them does that, because you're still telling the other guy, I'm not sure on the guy that's kicking. So we'll have to see how they do that. And it's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, it definitely, it will. But it's funny how kind of riled up the fans have got about the kicking stuff. And they haven't been great. There have been times they've been good. We'll see. So we'll see who comes out there. We probably won't know. They're not going to release anything. We'll just watch it practice this week to see if one guy's getting more reps than the other. But my guess is if USC defers and they kick off against Western Michigan, it'll be Michael Brown. But we'll see. Let's go Reggie in Seattle. He said Coach Hyde spoke about Chris Brown and his height. Was he referring to Chris Brown was he referring to Chris being too tall to play guard in college only? Because looking at the average size of NFL guards, they're all around the same height as Chris Brown. Even looking around college rosters, I noticed the same thing. Researching all of the top college guards from last year, 9 of the top 10 were 6'4 or taller. So I was a bit confused when he pointed to Chris Brown's height as a reason he might not succeed at his play. And just for reference, USC's listing him at 6'5", 310 pounds.
Well, what I'm saying, first of all, in the pros, they don't do anything with their guards but pass block and man block, okay? And two, they've got to be big enough and strong enough to move probably the strongest, stoutest guys on the defensive line, which are the defensive tackles or guards, whatever you want to call them. So you got to have big structured people. And again, you've got to be able to get leverage to drive them off the line of scrimmage. And Chris has got to learn to get his body down to be able to take on guys that are 6'1", 320 pounds, or 6'4". He looks forward to playing against 6'4 guys because they're the same height he is, and he's got to be able to pull it and lead through holes on a lot of these running plays that USC uses. The pros don't pull their guards hardly at all on anything. So that's what I'm concerned with. You've got to be able to lead the play and get up in the hole and get down and take on a linebacker. And remember, linebackers are not 6'5 or 6'4. They're 6'3, 6'2, and they scrape, and they're really quick. And they get up into the hole, and they block the hole. You've got to be able to get around there, turn that frame up the field, and you know, the taller you are, the harder it is with the momentum to get up in the head. Now, I'm not saying he can't do it. I hope he can. But I'm saying I think it's more difficult to do it. I think it's more difficult than a 6'2 guy like Benny or Toa, who's, 6'3, 6'2, these type of heights, to do that. So they're a little bit more athletic. But I think Chris is going to be a heck of a football player. It's just that, you know, is he a guard? And that's what we're waiting to see.
Let's see. We got a couple more, Coach, and then we'll let you go. Tarek wrote in, Colby Parkinson, the Stanford tight end, like Kerry Angeline, is 6'7" and a red zone force. Could we see Angeline lining up as an outside receiver and being a mismatch with corners in the red zone? And man, I saw Parkinson up at the opening, a year and a half ago or so. And man, that guy was like, really, really good. I was like, man, he's going to be a terror for Stanford. And looks like he's already starting that.
No, I hope so. I hope they do, especially on run plays too, not just pass plays. Also put him in the slot because what a size differential between a corner and a guy that big coming off the line of scrimmage. The corner wouldn't even see the running back. I mean, if you get in front of him and do the regular stock block type of thing you're supposed to do, in a running game, and you do that every single play, and then all of a sudden when you come off, you do that, you fake a stock block, and then you go, the stock block and go, you know, he's a big guy, you put the ball up in the air, and the safety can't get over there, and the other guy's fooled trying to stop the run on a play-action pass. So you can do a lot with your tight ends in the slot and also flanked out, and USC has a lot of tight ends that are big receivers. And you've got to try to put those guys in a spot where they have the advantage, where you can put them in a spot where they're going against a smaller corner, and maybe they're not as fast as your receivers, but they go up in the air. Look how many passes that are completed by guys just going up in the air and catching the football today, even if it's one-handed, because the defensive back can't crawl on his back or can't do anything with his pass interference. So I think it's great, especially on quick seam routes and curls and drags. You just put the ball up there, and the guy can't do anything with it. So Stanford's got that down. And I think USC, with all the tight ends they have and all the great receivers they have, certainly have got to put the receivers, whether they're tight ends or receivers, in a position where they can have an advantage against the defensive backs.
Yeah, I agree, Coach. the tight ends are going to be big for Sam Darnold this year because the receivers are young. You're not going to rely on Deontay Burnett all the time. I think they're going to mix it, you know, move it around a lot more. And you can really have, there are a couple weapons, at the tight end spot, and they're going to have to use them. So I think getting Daniel Emeterbebe, healthy again will be big. And, they got to use them. Stanford does a great job of doing it. And I think USC is going to have to too. That's going to be a real fun one. A couple weeks in the Coliseum with Stanford coming in.
Right. And also, you know, they got to get run the football too. USC's got to run the football so the play action pass means something. So it's going to be real important that they run the football too. If you can't run the football and you give up running the football, then the play action pass and all of that doesn't mean anything. So they've got to be able to emphasize the run as far as the pass too and be able to be a balanced type of football team. So both phases of the football team work successfully for them, and by moving the football, you keep the other team off the field. And remember, the best defense is an offense that just takes time going down the field and keeps the offense off the field of your opponent, and they start to panic, especially if they get behind, and it forces them out of their game plan.
One last topic, Coach. I wanted to talk about Western Michigan a little bit. The question is like not really about the team, but we'll talk about that after. Arthur said, and this is all caps, he's not happy. Hey, Ryan, USC is ranked number 4. Why is the number 4 team in the country only going to be shown on the Pac-12 network? Unless you have more info that I don't know about. Thanks, Art in the Bay Area. No, Art, you are exactly right. That's where the game's on. So it's a Pac-12 network game. So that's what you got. You can thank Larry Scott, I guess, the commissioner of the Pac-12 for that one. But thoughts on that, Coach, and then also any kind of early thoughts on the game?
Well, yeah, I say the same thing that he's saying about the game. That's really a shame because it's Labor Day weekend, okay? A lot of people are on vacation. A lot of people maybe just can't make the game, and they're going to be handicapped as far as not being able to pick it up, especially if they have DirecTV or they don't have the right cable wherever they might be. And in hotels, places you are, you know, they don't buy the extra package where you can pick up the Pac-12 network as far as with cable. So I agree 100% with you. I really do. I mean, it's a shame that the number 4th-ranked team in the country as far as Labor Day weekend, you've got UCLA and Texas A&M playing on a Sunday on ESPN nationally where the whole country gets exposure with the Pac-12 in the Southeastern Conference and UCLA's recruiting the nation too, that USC can't get that advantage. So I don't know how it all works as far as, you know, we talk about that all the time on how someone tries to tell us that he's working on it or whatever they're doing. But it's absolutely a shame that on Labor Day weekend that people are going to miss the USC team on the field. And, again, look what it does to the athletes. If Sam Darnold has a huge day and if he's trying to – and I don't care about awards. The awards happen by winning. Say he has a day and half the country can't, or more than half the country, can't see his performance, that's as far as media and voters, then I think that punishes kids. I think it punishes teams as far as rankings and everything else. So I think it really hurts the Pac-12, because the Pac-12 is good. The Pac-12's got 5 or 6 of the top quarterbacks in the country, and people should be watching them playing, and they should be getting exposure for the schools and universities and votings and rankings and all the things that happen out there, and they're not getting it. And it's absolutely a shame. I'm really surprised that more pressure isn't being put on the Pac-12 administration as far as by the presidents and athletic directors to get it done. Just get it done, whatever it is. Even if we give it to them, get it done, because we've got to have the exposure that every other university has.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because if you follow John Wilner at all, he does a great job covering the Pac-12, and you talk to like media people and stuff and they're like, yeah, this is a disaster. But you talk to the Pac-12 presidents, and that's what matters, is they're looking at this big picture. They're not worried about, well, all the schools get less money than the other schools. They're not worried about, well, you can't get it most anywhere and you can't get it on DirecTV. They're looking at it as, hey, we can get women's soccer and wrestling and water polo and all this stuff on television. And so that's their kind of big picture. So what's important to everyone that follows college football and everyone that, you know, loves the sport and loves what it does. That's not what's most important to the Pac-12 presence, at least the ones that John Wilner has talked to, and at least what I've heard from the different, you know, sources. I think a lot of the athletic directors are unhappy, but until the presidents are, I don't think you're going to see any kind of big changes.
Well, you know, I agree. I think it's great to have all the sports on. I think it's great. I'd love to be able to watch all the sports, but it's not on DirecTV. How the Big Ten has their own channel on DirecTV, so does the Southeastern Conference. So, you know, it can be done. It's just getting to the table and not trying to see. DirecTV is losing subscribers every single day, okay? Because everybody's going to other ways of being able to watch sporting events, okay? So DirecTV, you've got to look at them. You got to say, hey, we can't charge them, but they are not going to raise the rates on the people that are now taking DirecTV, but they're losing hundreds of thousands a year. So they can't raise the rate. So Larry Scott and the group's got to understand the exposure. We're just talking about football. The exposure. You keep the Pac-12 network if you want, but you got to get your football teams on DirecTV. So give it to them. Just give it to Fox. Give it to these others. Don't even charge them. Not making any money anyway. So that's what my thought is. But again, you know, I'm not at the table. I'm not at the negotiating. Or give it to DirecTV and let us have the choice of buying it. We'll buy Pac-12 Network. I mean, so I have to pay $10 a game or whatever I have to pay. Give me that option. At least give me that option, and you've made more money than you're making right now. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not expecting anything to change there, but well, any before I let you go, any kind of thoughts on? I haven't dug into Western Michigan yet. I'm gonna, you know, be honest about that. We'll have our previews and stuff going up later on in the week, and we'll try to do a preview podcast too. But any kind of initial thoughts? I mean, you know, team that won 12 games last year. No PJ Fleck, of course. He's moved on to Minnesota, but certainly a dangerous team that USC shouldn't take lightly.
Well, no, they shouldn't take anybody lightly. But again, my thoughts are that if you can't beat Western Michigan, you're not going to beat other people in your conference. And I think Western Michigan is really a well-organized machine, good coaching, great players as far as at their level of competition. But I think you've got to be able to beat them at home. Now, if I'm USC, I remember our opening game from last year, okay? I can't forget that one, okay? So right now, I'm saying to me, I don't want to be like it was last year. I don't want to start 1-3. As a coach, as a team member, as anybody, I'm going to be ready to play because I don't want that feeling ever again, the humiliation and what we went through, and at home on Labor Day weekend. So I'm going to get my team ready to play, and the players are going to get ready to play. And you've got great competition, so you got to get out there and you got to play. You can't let them hang around. You got to take them out of the game early where they start to believe who you are is really who you are. You're the fourth-ranked team in the country. We just want to get out of here without getting hurt. You're a 20-plus point favorite. I was on a show. You know, I was in Vegas last week where I do odds and different things with a lot of the bookmakers there, and I was asked, 26 points, coach, 26.5 points. Which way are you going on this game? And that's what it was. And I said, well, I'm telling you, I've been at their practices, and I know who they are, and I know who Western Michigan is and who they are, and they're traveling. I'd give the 26.5. They all looked at me and they said, you know what? If they are who they are, they should beat them by 26.5 points. I would be surprised. So if I was a betting guy, that's the way I'd go. But football is football. You never know what's going on. As far as Western Michigan, the number on Western Michigan is 9. Is 9. Would you go over or under on 9? That's what they figure. They're going to win 9 games. So you decide, look at their schedule and say, okay, their first two teams, or their first two games, I think they're going to lose. So that means they're going to win all their other games and possibly lose another. So, you know, they're a team that in most publications preseason, they've been picked 2, 3, or 4 in the West. That's the part of the MAC conference that they're in. So they're not the favorite to win the division, but they've learned how to win, and they're always dangerous. You read every year about Northern Illinois or somebody. They beat Northwestern last year. You always hear the MAC teams upsetting someone. You just got to make sure you're not that one.
Yeah. All right, Coach. Well, great stuff. I know we got you got busy stuff going on, so thanks again for popping on the show, and we're looking forward to getting your thoughts after the first game. We got games coming, man. We got to see some college football this weekend. We got more of it coming up this weekend. Really exciting.
Well, again, I want to thank you, Ryan, and all of our people that call in and give us questions or email them in or whatever you do. And again, it's game week. We hope your team wins. And remember, everything we say is just our opinion. So have a great football weekend. It's going to be great. Or football week. We've got a lot of things going on.
Yeah, lots going on. Thanks again for everyone for tuning in. We do appreciate it. That's Coach Harvey Hyde. I'm your host, Ryan Abraham, publisher of USCFootball.com. Hope you guys enjoyed this edition of the Peristyle Podcast. And we will talk to you next time.
Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.